Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
a little chat about special relativity. And this is the idea that as velocity increases, it does so in such a way that it can never exceed the speed of light. And this has a whole series of implications to do with mass, time and length. They all have to go through various contortions such that this is always the same thing. So fundamentally, relativity says that it's a system that you get the same answers independent of your frame of reference. And your frame of reference is actually your observer's frame of reference, is actual fact a little coordinate system which sits on your nose, pointing out of space, and generally it's the x-axis. Upwards is the up your nose is z, and y is left to right. In general, that's a general way of thinking about it. So every person, any individual, every observer, notional observer, has a frame of reference. Now, we have the two key frame of references in special relativity. The O, I forgot what the O stands for. The proper frame of reference, and then the frame with velocity on it. But however, there is a better way to talk about it, because a frame of references are associated with the person, to actually name the person. So O, I have, instead of being a naught, I have an O, so a slight difference. I have the occupant of the frame and the actual viewer of the frame. So the occupant of the frame is the person who's sitting on the bullet, sitting on the roller coaster, sitting on the rocket ship. They're the occupant. And that will be called the proper frame, proper time, the rest frame. Their velocity is zero relative, but it's going to turn down the air a little bit as I'm driving along here. So you've got O, and V is the velocity frame. But I also call it, rather than velocity, the viewer. The frame as seen from the point of the viewer. The frame in which the object has a velocity is one way of seeing it. And it's transpired in that if you are on a train moving forward at 1 kilometre an hour, you get a bit restless and you decide that you're going to get off at the end of the train, at the back, and you say, I'm going to get a bit of a head start by walking up towards the end of the train, at the front of the train, and I walk at 1 kilometre an hour. Your combined velocity, well, in the Galilean system would be 2 kilometres an hour. In the Einstein special relativity thing, it would be 1.999, lots of nines, and a little bit less. And it's because it means that if you're on a train, and there's a train inside a train inside a train inside a train, and they all decide to go at 1 kilometre an hour, the net speed can never ever reach above the speed of light. There's a mathematical way for which these numbers are mapped into minus the speed of light to positive the speed of light. And it's done by a function called 1 on the square root of 1 minus x squared, or the velocity over c squared, the relative velocity. And this converts a whole linear number line across to within two boundaries, and this is special relativity. Now, the result that I want to talk about is the idea, and it's interesting to see that Einstein and the basic things talk about the most fundamental unit called momentum. And momentum is the velocity times the mass. And so as you, as say you have a rocket engine on something and it chucks stuff out the back, it will increase the momentum forever and ever and ever. And in fact, you can actually have something which has infinite momentum, but never reaches the speed of light. And the way that it does that is mass times velocity. The mass dilates, the mass increases. So the mass increases by a factor of, you've got your proper mass, which is, let's say, if you've got a pair of scales and you measure the mass by scales in the rocket's ship, it's that particular mass naught or m occupant. Or you can see it from the side and you can say, well, I can do a series of measurements, namely by measuring the energy or whole sorts of different things, and actually measure that it's got increased mass. Now, this is, for me, a very, very interesting thing, because if it's got an increased mass, it's got an increased gravitational pull. You know, because the fact that a mass will have a gravitational pull regardless of whether it's going fast or slow. It's the MV is your gravitational pull mass, which is rather interesting. And it sort of means, as far as we're concerned, is that it seems to be attracted to a combination of the mass and the energy of the actual proper mass and the energy and energy term with it. So the question is, what is the mass? What is the momentum of an electron travelling at a fraction of the speed of light? Now, the thing is that as it travels towards the speed of light, it will eventually reach infinite momentum. So if I could keep on paddling that electron along, which you can actually do, you can increase it, and it does increase past the speed of light. Momentum increases every time you push it forward, because it must push back. The momentum must go somewhere, goes into it, and the mass of the electron increases. Now, it increases by a factor of 1 into the square root of all this, 1 minus V on C squared. Now, there is an interesting sort of numbers which have a beautiful relationship between each other. Now, one of the critical ones is 70.1% the speed of light. Because 70.1 the speed of light is 70.1 is 1 of the square root of 2, 1 minus a half is the square root, so 1 minus the square root of a half or squared is basically the square root of all that is a half, the square root of a half. So it's 70.01 speed means that you get a mass, a time dilation of the square root of 2, 1 of the square root of 2, or the square root of 2, depends how you actually talk about it here. I'm just going to have to just pay a little bit of attention here so I don't get killed. I'm just doing a roundabout as I'm going here. Whoops, here we go. There we go. Let the driver up there, so please, I'm doing it. Please, people have sort of a weight wish associated with it. So, 70.1 is one of those square root of 2-ish things. The other thing which is got a bit of a symmetry is 0.6 and 0.8. So if I observe something travelling at 0.6 the speed of light, it has its clocks are going slower by a factor of 0.08. Its length is shorter by a factor of 0.08. So a metre will be contracted to 80 centimetres, and its time will be 1 on 0.8, and its mass will be 1 on 1 on 0.8. So 0.8 is 4 on 5. 5 on 4 means that it's travelling, it'll be 25% heavier travelling forward. And so in this 0.6, if it's travelling 0.6 speed of light, it's got a contraction factor of gamma of 0.8, or if it's got a traveling 0.8% the speed of light, it has by symmetry a gamma factor of 0.6. That is that its length for each meter will be appear to be 60 centimeters long, and it will be 1/60 times heavier and 1/0.6 times heavier and more slow. So 1/0.6 is basically 6/10. So 10/6 is 4/6 is 2/3. So it would be, if you're following me on this, you've got 10/6, 6/6, and 4/6 is 2/3. It'll be 66% slower and 66% more heavy. So it'll be 1 kilogram will increase in mass, traveling at 80% speed of light to 66% more. So to get the momentum of a viewer, the thing is that all, as part of relativity, all agree on relative velocity. And they all agree, they all have to agree, because they have to, by some method, get no one ever traveling faster than the speed of light. That's one of the things with special relativity, is that all frames agree on relative velocity. What they disagree with is the rate of time and the rate of mass and the length within that frame. The people get rules that don't match up. Now, we have a whole heap of paradoxes which get thrown up from special relativity, and the key to the unlocking the paradoxes is that mathematically the paradox exists. If you said that, if, say, the twin paradox is I travel away from me faster than the speed of light, and also a fraction of the speed of light, my clock slows down, the twin ages 11 months in their friend who's left on Earth in 12, they turn around at the same speed, and they come back after 24 months, having only aged 22 months. So where does that 2 months go? How can you resolve this process? Because the frames are the same, and the important thing is that the twin, who's sped up to go away, accelerated to change speed again, and then decelerated again, has gone under 4 sections of acceleration. The other twin is gone. The symmetry is broken. One twin accelerates, the other twin doesn't. So therefore, you get it going through them. So you get this very interesting thing, is that the momentum goes up to infinity. The distance goes down. You get these paradoxes here that there is nothing to stop you feeling that you're travelling faster than the speed of light. If you have an engine out the back of you, which is propelling you forward, you feel that you're going faster than the speed of light. To the outside observer, you don't travel faster than the speed of light. To the other observer, if you have a proper ruler, you don't travel at the speed of light. But if you use a ruler which is from the outside outset, if you say Alpha Centauri is 4 light years away, and you measure how far the distance is, and I can travel to Alpha Centauri in, what, a week? That's impossible. What actually happens is that as you speed up, clock, as you're traveling to Alpha Centauri, the speed, now this is another really important thing to do, is that as you travel to an object, your perception of clock will change as the clock is traveling to and forward for you. That is, if a clock is blue shifted towards you, it will appear to tick more quickly. It's only at the point where the clock is exactly perpendicular from you that you notice a definable change. That is, that things travelling towards you have their time accelerate as it's pulling. As a clock runs towards you, your clock speeds up, and as it moves away from you, it slows down. In fact, your wristwatch will slow down a full, say if your arm is 2 feet, say 3 feet long, it'll be 3 nanoseconds slower. So what happens is, as your clock moves away from you, that velocity moving away will make it appear more slowly. Now, your big question is, how come teachers cannot teach this correctly. They just can't. Firstly, because they have looked up exam papers and have created a closed universe system where they have created exam world where there's only so many exam questions asked in a certain format, and therefore they teach their understanding to match the exam question. So if you, say, have a clock in a spaceship and it is travelling at 0.6 C, you will observe it at the time begin to tick really fast as it comes towards you. So what will happen is that you will see that, say, if it's Alpha Centauri, it launches at say 10 years ago, it launches and it travels towards you. What will happen is that it will have a date. So you will see Alpha Centauri, say today is 2020. Alpha Centauri, when you look at it, will have a clock at an age of 2016. It'll take 4 years light to come across to you. Now, what will happen is that the clock that's in Alpha Centauri, if it was taken to you, accelerated and decelerated and handed to you, it would be in time again. Because what's happening is that as it comes towards you, it blue ships and the seconds get shorter. So now the thing is, this is a real incredible thing, that the actual speed of time appears to slow down as you get towards the edge of the universe. Things are going so slowly. So essentially, Big Bang is still glowing, but the wavelength of the light that we see coming out appears to come from atoms which have been slowed down and produce light at infrared wavelengths. It's still in its own framework, it's still an energy transition, but it looks as though the energy transition is still the same energy, but it's traveling at the same time. Now, the sort of way is that, say, a spark at the start of time goes there, it still has the same energy which pops to you. However, the energy is now spread out to a much longer wavelength over a much longer time. So that piece of light which comes from some radiation dropping between two energy levels still contains the agreed amount of energy to go between those two points. But what's happening is that it appears to be coming out very, very slowly in a very, very red wavelength. So clocks appear to go slower towards the edge of the universe. You've got all this complexity here, and the feeling that we can't really possibly explain this to kids because they'll get confused. So what we do is we lie to them. We lie to them, we cajole them, we do all sorts of things. And eventually, they don't know what to believe. Of course, there is Father Christmas and Santa Claus, but there is a certain amount of beneficial white lying to preserve a cultural norm, to allow something to happen. So we basically lie to people about special relativity. And so we say that a clock on a traveling spaceship will appear to slow down. Well, in fact, it actually appears to speed up as it's travelling towards you. So because each tick is now compressed by this blue shift. Part of the blue shift is it coming towards you, is appearing to do these sorts of things. Now, but what we would agree with, so as measured time is there, but if we did something of measuring the orbital velocity around it, we would see that it would, so if we had some way of measuring gravity and measuring mass, we would see that that mass does not vary as you come through. But definitely time varies, and of course, as things come towards you, the length is all fixed. looking for, well, this is another interesting thing, is to, in order to get the lens to work, the actual object appears rotated. In fact, you can actually, it's something you're traveling as fast as the speed of light comes towards you. It's all the light waves are rotated around and channel and start to beam forward from it. So say if I have a light source and it's producing light out of the source, in order for it to travel, the light will appear to the viewer, so it's coming out, you know, like a uniform spherical guy. But when it's coming towards you under special, it's like the special relativity has so many effects that part of special relativity is that radiation emitted from the object traveling at speed coming towards you will be actually thrown forward into its light cone, forward and blue and red at the back, such that you get. And so as far as the actual object is concerned, so you've got all these funny features. I'm coming towards the end of this. That is, one is mass dilation is pretty safe, but length and time dilation require a little bit more thinking about how it goes along. And it's not only such that things are traveling forward, it actually looks rotated as it comes past you. All these things are a little bit hairy, a bit hard to describe, and of course over time hopefully I'll find a way of describing it for you. I'm now at the end of my journey, ready to come home. Thanks a lot for listening to me.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.